I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE as we continue to cover the triumph of Trump, as well as grocery inflation hit by the proxy war on Russia through Ukraine, the swing votes of Arab Americans during Holocaust Harris genocide in West Asia, freedom of speech on Elon Musk's Twitter X platform was critical for Trump's re-election, and exposing the censorship on that platform with the help of Musk were journalists like today's guest, who published documents proving that before Musk bought X, there was no free speech, just like there is none today on Google, Meta, Facebook and other pro-Harris outlets. In the run-up to Trump's victory, Joe Rogan claimed there is only one man out there you can trust when it comes to journalism in the USA. Joining me again from New Jersey is Racket News' Matt Taibbi, Rolling Stone former contributing editor and author of New York Times bestsellers Hate Inc., The Divide and Insane Clown President. Matt, thanks for coming back on the show. I don't know what that last book, Insane Clown President, I don't know what that was about. Don't know who that referred to, obviously. Before we get to your reaction to the victory, as I said, Rogan credited with helping Trump, said you're the only person he says you're the only person he trusts. He said to a very startled Elon Musk that you're the go-to guy. Musk, Tucker Carlson, these are all Trump cabinet material. Maybe by the time this is broadcast, some cabinet members, the scarier ones we'll talk about later, will have been announced. Have you had a call? Have you had a call yet to serve?
Oh, no. Nobody in their right mind would think about me working in government. I don't think that would ever be possible.
The ideal press secretary mouthpiece for Trump, surely. To answer questions to the legacy media.
I don't think I would enjoy that even in the best of circumstances. Although, you know, look, there is a tradition of journalists doing that, but I could never go over to the other side. I can't see it.
Yeah, maybe if it's peace. But more seriously, mm-hmm. Amazing aspect of this election was that anyone who thought the media, mass mainstream so-called media, controlled the minds of Americans, that money was the big decider on elections, that the intelligence agencies control the American electoral process, none of them have any power, it turns out. The people they wanted, they wanted Harris, and the American people wanted Trump.
Well, I think they tried their hardest to influence this election. I mean, we had incredible endorsements. There's this organization called National Security Leaders for America, which has put out a statement with 1,043 national security officials, including a long list of former cabinet members, generals, admirals, or over 200 of the latter. And look, it didn't have any effect. And the media's constant propagandizing, not just in this cycle, but over the last 8 years, I think it's very important to point out that it had negative influence on the population. The Americans have been told for 8 years that Donald Trump is a racist and a fascist dictator in waiting, and yet he gained significantly with Black and Hispanic voters. He gained with independents. And so clearly, it's not just not listening to the authorities, it's actively defying what they're saying, which is incredible.
We don't know how your Twitter files may have attenuated some of the shadow banning and censorship on other platforms, but do you think it's clear that a Trump administration will, or a Trump administration's Justice Department will have to bring Zuckerberg, Sundar Pichai of Google, YouTube, to some kind of justice for monopoly censorship reasons? It's clear they're shadow banning people and restricting free speech in the United States?
I mean, I hope so. I hope there's at least an investigation, that somebody like Jim Jordan is allowed to
Jim Jordan, representative for Ohio in the House.
In the House, actually, yes, but the worry that I have, and this is something that I said from the start about these tools that we discovered in the Twitter files, is that they can be misused by anyone, and the sort of history of this new movement towards laws like Europe's Digital Services Act or the Online Safety Act in the UK is that they're designed so that whoever is in power can use them. And there's going to be an enormous temptation for anybody who sits in that chair to start to toggle things up and down in a certain way. And so I do hope the Trump administration resists that temptation. So we don't know that
you don't sound that optimistic. And you know that Elon Musk is a close advisor to Trump. And so for you, well, I thought you'd be over the moon about this.
Well, I mean, Elon's suppressing my account, so I mean, he's not exactly someone who is opposed.
Have you not repaired that relationship? Because yeah, I could see a startled expression with Joe Rogan when Rogan literally singled you out, and there's no doubt Trump has singled out Rogan as being a really important factor in this win for a certain demographic.
Yeah, I mean, look, Elon's a complicated character, but they're all complicated characters, and they're all subject to all kinds of pressures, and we don't know exactly what they're being told behind the scenes and what kind of, sort of deals are being brought to them by the security agencies, by advertisers who are threatening to boycott. We don't know the entire story. I do think that the Trump administration or the Donald Trump and people like J.D. Vance, they've at least brought the censorship issue out into the open and said they're opposed to it, which is a huge start. And Elon Musk is somebody who just by doing the Twitter files did this amazing public service by exposing the whole thing to the public. So, yeah, I'm not unoptimistic. I just would like to point out that there are temptations for any politician here.
Yeah, you mentioned my totalitarian country, Britain, which has a gross censorship and no free speech and so on. I mean, Trump immediately reacted to... we had your colleague Paul Thacker on the show the other week. Immediately reacted to Keir Starmer's Labour Party interference, attempted interference in the US elections.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he doesn't... My instinct is that Donald Trump does not like these types of laws. He hasn't said a whole lot about them. There were some communications in the Twitter files where he complained about certain posts and kind of sort of asked that they be taken down, but they were few and far between compared to the enormous quantities that were coming from the other side. And so... yeah, I'm optimistic. I think, you know, absent a Trump victory, we were looking almost certainly at the United States adopting something like the DSA or the Online Safety Act in the very near future. I think that was coming because in part because of the argument that the failure to regulate social media led to Trump's election or to Trump's comeback, at least. So had he not won, I think we would have seen some kind of crackdown pretty quickly.
And that would have been the end of Matt Taibbi?
Maybe, yes, me and probably a whole bunch of other folks. And we already have de facto censorship in this country. It's done in an informal way instead of a formal way as it is in Europe. But, you know, I think if there had been a close contested situation, if there had been demonstrations where, you know, there were people out in the streets and, you know, they were telling us ahead of time that they were concerned about the possibility of misinformation inspired violence. So if there had been anything like that, they would have clamped down. And I know they have legislation in place for eventualities like that.
So Rumble would have been attacked, which this show goes out on, I should add. Free speech, really important when it came to persuading publics in Europe, which, as you say, they've got these laws of totalitarianism already. Very important, though, to get support for Zelensky to outlaw the word Nazi in British media, in the United States media. Do you think Zelensky will face Noriega's fate, Saddam Hussein's fate, the fate of those who the United States support, who ban elections and opposition parties and all the rest of it, and then are thrown to the scrap heap history?
It's possible. You know, Trump did approve some funding for Ukraine in the past, but he has run as somebody who's against a prolonged war, and I think his supporters would be incredibly disappointed if there was not a swift negotiated end to the conflict in Ukraine. It's part of his political identity that he's against the so-called forever wars. It's not clear to me that his record matches up with that exactly, but he at least ran on that. And I know from covering his campaign in 2016 that this was incredibly important to building up his support with kind of working class America, where if you go around to red states and you see so many people who came back from America's adventures and, or misadventures in Afghanistan and Iraq, and they were so angry about so many things. And that was a huge factor in electing Trump the first time, and I'm sure this time as well.
Will we get rid of the phrase middle class, which is the one the Democrats always love to use, and start using the phrase working class in the United States again, firmly and properly? Because, I mean, clearly the media had no idea who was going to win this election, nor did the pollsters. Will people start to understand that the working class is alive and well, or at least they were dying and were unwell before they voted this time around?
The middle class is in tremendous trouble and has been since 2008. Their fate after 2008, when we instituted bailouts that were openly unfair, right? They rescued the people who were responsible for the crash, and they left all, you know, people in sort of middle class or lower middle class suburbs and rural America to be hit by mass foreclosures. They lost their life savings if they were invested in mortgage-backed securities, which a lot of pension funds were. And so there was an incredible wellspring of anger towards the upper class sort of managerial sect of America. And what was worse was that when Trump got elected, those same people began to use pejorative terms to describe those people. We stopped using working class as something that was a good term, and instead they started using white working class, which became synonymous with racist. And I hope this stuff is over, because we just went through a period of 8 years of essentially a kind of moral panic where everything was distorted, and I hope we can go back to just describing things as they are and talking to each other as normal Americans again.
Matt Taibbi, I'll stop you there. More from the award-winning journalist and former Rolling Stone contributing editor after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the award-winning journalist and former Rolling Stone contributing editor, Matt Taibbi. Matt, we're talking about the working class. The single issue that this region, where I'm speaking to you from, is the Gaza genocide. And obviously that influenced the votes in Michigan. But what do you think is the significance of the $100 million from Miriam Adelson to the Trump campaign? I mean, is that the 2 million, mostly women and children, question when it comes to Gaza? What is the impact of that donation?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure that, as you mentioned at the top, this was a kind of paradigm-shattering election in many, many ways. Money didn't matter as much as it has. In other elections in our past, Trump was massively outraised by the Harris campaign, and it didn't appear that any one donation, whether it was from Adelson or Musk, turned the tide. I think it was much more the posture of traditional media and the response of institutional America that people were voting against. So I'm not sure there.
Yeah, and so he's won the House and the Senate, and it's his last term. So perhaps he doesn't owe people like a president normally owes people. But then we wouldn't even know about some of the atrocities happening in Gaza without, ironically, Netanyahu's friend, Elon Musk, because he freed up X. What now for, I think the great British politician George Galloway called it mausoleum media. What is going to happen to all of that? Will they just be able to die gracefully, or will there be some sort of attempts by a Trump administration to regulate monopoly media that actually people aren't that interested in anymore. Maybe go back to FCC regulations that were there before Clinton destroyed all your local journalism that used to prosper across the United States.
Well, I think, you know, when Trump got elected, there was this incredible moment where he thanked a long list of podcasts that had been instrumental in spreading his campaign message. And that was a really amazing moment because it spoke to the almost total impotence of the so-called traditional media in this country. They were really not a factor. If Trump tries to crack down in any way on CBS or, you know, get their license yanked because of the shenanigans with some of the editing in the Kamala Harris interview, I think he'd be making a mistake because legacy media in America is basically dead. We saw after this election that they were unable to process the fact that so much of this country was voting against them, that they had lost trust in them. There was an incredible thing that happened where, ABC's Jimmy Kimmel, a comedian, rolled his eyes and told a joke about how ridiculous it was that there was somebody who voted for Trump because Kamala Harris wouldn't do an interview with Joe Rogan. Now, Joe Rogan, his audience is roughly 25 times bigger than the biggest cable audience in America. And for a presidential candidate to eschew that interview is basically telling people that they don't want those votes. And so that wasn't silly at all. That wasn't a trifle at all. But the people in the press think that these people are second rate. And the reality is the audience figures show that nobody really watches them anymore. They don't really have any influence. So better just to ignore them.
Yeah, and the celebrities didn't work either. Of course, we all remember how Trump enlarged the swamp, and he didn't drain the swamp in the first term. I know that Pompeo is being spoken about as a Pentagon pick, which would surely show he's again helping the swamp. But do you think there will be more revenge this time? I mean, his supporters used to chant "lock him up" about Hillary, and clearly crimes were committed by the Biden administration, the Biden-Harris administration, and previous administrations. Is he going to open up all the books and start to get these people for all of what they did to him when he was out of office? Because many people thought he would go to jail if Harris had won.
Well, you mentioned interviewing Paul Thacker. We did a story about the Center for Countering Digital Hate. And I heard from the Trump campaign who told me that in no uncertain terms that they were going to be investigated. I think the term was to the hilt, and that was just for starters. They intend to do a whole mess of investigations into the censorship complex, into the intelligence world. And I think they're serious about this. They know that their voters want mass firings of people from those bureaucracies. They're tired of paying taxes to support these gigantic bureaucracies that consider large parts of the country to be tantamount to domestic terrorist enemies. And I think it would be a political mistake if they didn't follow through on those promises, because that was central to his campaign.
Of course, then one asks what threats will be against even a politician so elected by the popular vote, if he starts releasing, I mean, he can't release the Epstein files, clearly, because he'd presumably be in them, but he can release the JFK files, maybe files into the Ukraine war, maybe files into all these things that were going on under the Harris-Biden administration?
I think it would be a tremendous opportunity for them. It's been suggested on Twitter that there be like a government version of the Twitter files, and some of his wealthy backers immediately jumped on the idea as a good one. So it would be great if that happened. I can't imagine that the logistics of that would be easy, because there would have to be a considerable amount of sorting before you let you can't just do what Elon did and just let a whole team of journalists rummage around and all the files. But it would be great if they opened up everything from the JFK assassination to the rationale for going to Iraq, for entering the Afghan war, for, the reason for staying in Afghanistan, for COVID. I mean, there's a million things that the public has very legitimate questions about, and it would be wise for Trump to open up some of that information.
And yet Pompeo was at the rallies towards the end of his campaign, who coordinated assassination attempts against Julian Assange of WikiLeaks. Because you're talking, in a sense, of like a government WikiLeaks.
Yes, and Trump had an opportunity to pardon Assange and did not. I know that he was lobbied very hard by some people close to him to actually go through with that pardon, and he didn't. So, Trump is a complicated figure. I think this is something that people don't understand about him. They think of him either as this simpleton or this impulsive character who just kind of goes where his emotions lead him in the moment. But he's actually thinking quite a lot about alliances and who he can afford to make angry and who he wants to keep close. And he's never gone all the way in terms of kicking the national security folks, out the door. He's done some things that were really, really interesting, like, foregoing the daily briefing by the CIA and all those folks, which was long overdue. But, we'll have to see. His voters definitely want him to take a bigger bite this time. And I think for his own self-preservation, he's now aware that they want him gone. So I think it'll be a harsher confrontation.
So kind of return to the image that some have of him as a real estate developer with Roy Cohen, the new celebrated movie, The Apprentice, showing his mentorship of Trump, that he will actually go for them this time and doesn't have to care. Because what's it going to lose him if he, unless they kill him? I mean, RFK Jr. has already been on doing the media round saying he's going to dissolve whole departments of the Food and Drug Administration and affect Big Pharma. And we know the power of Big Pharma. I mean, the stories of Big Pharma whistleblowers in horribly dangerous circumstances since the 1970s. It's violence.
Yes, but what's so fascinating about this moment is that Trump got in largely, his entire power base is not, it has nothing to do with corporate money. It doesn't have to do with institutional America. It's not even really based on things like Twitter or X. He just has massive numbers of people who voted for him, and he doesn't owe anybody anything, and he can afford to do almost anything in terms of upsetting traditional constituencies, and he would be cheered for it. So it's a unique circumstance. No president has ever gotten to the White House and not owed quite a lot. This time, we'll have to see. But he has opportunities here. And I know from talking to people in his campaign that they're much more cognizant this time of the dangers that surround them from, for instance, the Justice Department, the FBI, and the CIA. So we'll see.
And Larry Fink of BlackRock said, the election didn't matter at all. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So you'd beg to differ. This election really, really did matter when it comes to something different in the United States, especially for the working classes, clearly, because it's make or break for many of them.
Well, it may not matter economically. I mean, he's got to figure out some way to stop the bleeding for people who are at the, not in the top 10% of the income curve, because there's just a tremendous amount of suffering there. I mean, we have these situations where private equity firms are buying up everything from starter homes to, ophthalmology practices to what they call the trades, right? So even plumbers are now owned by Wall Street, and the American dream is dying quickly because nobody is able to make enough money to get their little piece of pie anymore. And he's got to find a way to reverse that, or else none of this is going to matter. But I do think culturally, the election is already a massive turning point in American history, because it's essentially exposed the entire sort of cultural framework of the country as having no influence and having been lost to its own audience, and that's, you know, that's something we haven't seen before in this country. It's fascinating.
And just finally, I feel like I'm asking this question in every single interview at the moment of all our guests. Will they try and kill him? Will the CIA try and kill him in the 2 months before January 20th?
Let's put it this way. I will not be surprised if there are more assassination attempts. There's no evidence that that anybody inside the government had anything to do with the prior attempts. Nothing that's terribly concrete, but everything is on the table now. I mean, this is maybe the end of everything for NATO, for the intelligence services. I mean, there's a lot on the line here, so nothing would surprise me. Let's put it that way.
And foreign intelligence agencies, MI6, what happens to them? I mean, already people were saying intelligence services in Europe are devastated. I mean, it's a bit funny, you've got to admit, because they're supposed to know what's going on and clearly had no finger on the pulse of late American capitalism in the United States as to why Americans would vote for Trump. But could the United States join BRICS?
Doesn't that tell you something, though? Doesn't that tell you that these agencies that we fund so heavily can't even answer the most basic questions about their own populations, that they don't understand they don't understand things that, you know, the average barber in a small town in America gets without any funding. You know, these people are so locked up in their own hermetically sealed bubble of stupidity that they can't see, you know, beyond their own prejudices. And so that makes them dangerous and useless and expensive. So, it's ironic, but it worries me, too, because, you know, their continued bureaucratic existence is at stake.
Taibbi, thank you.
Thanks very much, Afshin.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those surviving the UK-US-EU armed holocaust here in this region. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.